Hey, I'm Russell Leeds.
I'm Ricky Mando.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. On this week's show, how to set up a successful deal selling business. So why don't we start off by just talking about what exactly is Dale selling and Dale selling?
Are you all right?
You're selling people called Dale. What exactly is deal selling and how does it all work?
Deal selling. Well, you know Samuel actually invented this strategy.
I did know that, yes.
So what is it? How does it work? Well, here's what deal selling is. Deal selling is simply finding an opportunity, finding a potential deal, doing the due diligence, viewing it, crunching the numbers, and then packaging it all together very beautifully, and then passing it on to an investor to actually buy the deal where they pay you a fee. Now, here's a really cool thing about deal sourcing. Not only do you need no money to do deal sourcing, but also it pays very well. Catch this. The average fee that you'll get from deal sourcing for the average house is between £3,000 and £5,000. Now, don't take my word for it. If you look at Winners on a Wednesday every single week on Samuel's YouTube channel, there's deal sourcers almost every week on there making tens of thousands of pounds. And how do they do it? From deal sourcing. By packaging and selling deals for between £3,000 and £5,000 each deal. And £3,000 would be like the kind of real bottom end of a fee. I don't know, you buy from deal sources yourself.
I do. Do you know what I think is so great about deal selling? If you look at lots of like side hustles that people talk about, you've got things like drop shipping, you've got things, you know, all, you know, like, I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk talks about things like garage sales, things like that, right? My issue with those is that it's so low ticket. It's such a low profit industry because let's say, you know, let's say you're doing a garage sale, right?
Trying to sell some Hot Wheels cars for like £10 profit.
Yeah, and it's like all the work and the effort to make, or you do dropshipping and you're promoting your products and you're making like pence per order. So it means you've got to do such high volume to make any money. Now, don't get me wrong, there are people that make a lot of money from low profits and high volume, but it's much, much harder. If you are in the property space, and this goes to anything property, if you think about it, right, when you buy a property, you might buy it for, what's the average property, about £300,000 now?
Yeah.
Right. And like, you look at like the agents and stuff that are all charging a percent, or you've got, everything's a little percentage of it. So, oh, the solicitor, it's £4,000. So, really, they'd only get away with that because it's buying a property, right? Imagine if it was something else.
Like, and also, they get away with it because it's needed.
Yeah, but why is it so expensive? If you compare it to other, like, what do they actually do for their £4,000?
Well, they do. It's a conveyancing.
Yeah. Imagine if you're buying a car, right? If you're buying a car, a second-hand car for £5,000, and the solicitor was like, "I'll draw the contract up and everything, no, and I'll do it." How much? £4,000. You'd be like, £4,000. The car's only £5,000, right? The only reason the £4,000 seems cheap or seems not too bad is because you're spending £300,000 on the house. It's the same though. When you're trying to haggle,
yeah,
right? And it's like, oh, how much is the house up for? Oh, it's up for £325. Oh, let's offer £305, and they're like £310. And you're like, oh, yeah, go on then. That's £5,000 extra that you've just agreed, just like that. Imagine if that was on something else. Like you went shopping. How much of that shopping? Oh, it's £100. Ah, yeah, I'll pay £5,000, whatever. Right, because the figures are so high.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It doesn't feel very much because, even just rounding up, like you say it's £300,000. It's actually £299,000. That's £1,000.
Yeah.
Right, but it feels like nothing.
It feels like nothing.
Nothing, right? So because you're in such a well-paid, expensive space in property, when you're selling a deal, if you're selling a £300,000 deal and your fee is £3,000, that's 1%.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, it feels like nothing. So when you're selling deals, you're getting really well packed. Because what you're doing is you're packaging the information, right?
Yeah.
But you're packaging a really valuable bit of information, which allows you to charge a really high amount. So like you mentioned, £3,000 to £5,000 is pretty standard. I bought deals of people for £20,000.
Yeah.
Depending on the scale of the deal. So you're right. It's extremely well paid. It's a brilliant business.
And I think everyone should be doing deal sourcing, because even if you're looking to buy houses yourself, or you're looking to, let's say you're the investor you're looking to take on deals yourself, you can't take on all the deals in the world. And you'll probably come across deals that aren't suitable for what you're looking to do, might be the wrong area, you know, might be not fitting your criteria. But if you know how to pass them on, you're not leaving money on the table then. You're utilising a skill to make money, even if you don't want to be an active deal sourcer. It's worth knowing how to do it, just so you can pass on deals.
Yeah, well, if you're... The skill of being able to find good deals, do your research, work out the ROIs, work out the rent, work out the value of the property, all those skills, you need that to find your own deals, which you should be doing. Everyone should be investing in property, in my opinion, right? So if you're finding deals anyway, one of two things is going to happen. Probably, you're going to be finding too many deals that you can't afford to get. Or, secondly, you might be finding deals that are good, but not quite right for you at this time for whatever reason. So, for example, it might be it's a great deal, but you can't quite afford it.
Mm.
Or it might be that it's a great deal, but you're now moved on to bigger deals. Or it's too big for you. There's lots of different reasons, right? It's just because it's a good deal doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good for you.
Yeah.
So you're going to be coming across these deals when you're looking. So what do? If you can sell the ones that don't quite work for you for whatever reason, it might be it's too big for you, it might be it's too small for you, it might be that the ROI is not quite right for you for what you're looking for. It might not be in your area, whatever it is. If you can be finding these deals and then passing them on and getting paid $3,000-$4,000, if you sell one of those a week, $3,000-$4,000 a week, you're up making like 15...
That's more than the average salary, isn't it?
It's more than the average monthly salary.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah?
Yeah. If you're doing, you know, one a month even, is more than the average salary.
Yeah,
just
it is.
In your spare time while you're doing all the work anyway. So, yes, we think deal selling is amazing. So the question is, the actual subject of this podcast is how do you set up a successful deal sourcing business? Well, I kind of think we've covered step number one, which is you need to be a master at finding good deals. You need to be an expert at finding good deals. So once you've got that skill, you've learned how to find good deals, then what do you do? How do you set up a good deal sourcing business?
Okay, well, it depends what angle we want to go at this with. Because most people, when you look online, it will say compliance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, we don't teach that. That's what most people think. What we're driven by, which is why this is why we get the results that we get within the training company, is we're driven by people getting results and making money quick. What you need to do is to make money quick, because you can't you can set up the business once you've made some money. Now, how do you do it without having compliance and everything like that first? Well, what I think you should do is the first thing is once you know how to find good deals, is you should connect with people that already have an established deal sourcing business and give them the deals to sell and then split the profits 50-50.
You kind of touched on a bit of a massive area here.
Have I?
Think we can brush over this. Yeah. So,
okay.
Do you want to explain then? So when it comes to compliance,
yeah,
a lot of people will say to be compliant as a deal sourcer that they've created lots and lots of red tape that you need to do. So for example, you need to join the PRS, you need to the property, or the property redress scheme or the property ombudsman.
Yeah.
They'll say you need money, anti-money laundering, AML. They'll say that you need...
Indemnity insurance.
They'll say that you need... What else do they say that you need?
ICO.
Yeah, lots of things, right? Lots and lots of red tape they say you need. And the reason they say that is because they're treating your deal selling business as an estate agency, and that's all the compliance that you need in place to have an estate agency. So for a long time there was this debate, right? It's like, when you're selling deals, are you acting as an agent? If you're acting as an agent, then you need X, Y, Z, blah, 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 and you need all this compliance, which costs a couple of grand to get everything set up, and obviously there's ongoing fees associated with that as well. However, what we've spent a lot of money as a company dealing with solicitors and looking through the law and everything to work out, do you need all this stuff in place? Do you need to be a member of the TPO or the PRS? Do you need anti-money laundering insurance, et cetera, et cetera? And you actually, when you're selling deals, as long as you've got the right contracts, so the contracts are key, right? As long as you've got the right contracts, so you're not set up as an estate agent, and your business isn't using the wrong SIC codes, which is setting you up as a estate agent. Instead, you're just selling the information for the deal on as a lead. Then you don't need a lot of that red tape. And we actually set up our own agency called PIMS, the Property Investors Mediation Service, which which covers people that have got the correct contracts. In fact, if you're a member of PIMS, you get all the contracts included, right? So we set up PIMS a couple of years ago. We've got hundreds, if not probably in thousands of members now. And this is for people that don't want to go through all the red tape and they just want the correct contracts, and they're covered by PIMS from a mediation point of view. So if anyone's got an issue with you, they can go to PIMS, which is great because it gives people that are buying deals from you a surety? That's the wrong word, isn't it?
Peace of mind.
Peace of mind. We'll go with that. Gives them peace of mind that you're not going to just take their money and run, right? So PIMS is brilliant. You've got the right contracts to PIMS. You know, you don't have to join PIMS, but what you do need to do is get the right contracts in place. You can go to a solicitor and get those drawn up yourselves, but you need the right contracts to avoid all the red tape and compliance. You've got to be very careful when you do that, the contracts are correct. So two things, right? First thing we mentioned is you need to be brilliant at finding deals. The next thing is you need the correct contracts in place. So now we kind of covered the compliance side.
Yeah.
You can carry on.
Okay, cool. So that's the compliance side.
Yeah.
Now you can, if you're like brand new, just starting out, you can pass deals on to other deal sources where they can sell it and give you a split of the profit.
And then that way you don't need the compliance or the contracts.
Correct. However, I would have a contract between you and the deal sourcer.
Yeah, but that doesn't need to be like anything clever, right? That could just be a standard contract where you're passing the deal, they're selling it, because that way you're falling under their umbrella.
Yeah.
I would only recommend doing that for your first couple of deals.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think really, if you're running a business, you want it to be your
I would recommend doing that whilst you build up an investors list, get your, you know, company together, sort out your landing pages, sort out your CRM system. So it's like you can start to make money straight away whilst you're putting together the infrastructure of the actual business.
Or if you are literally just finding deals, but maybe you're like, well, I am looking for deals, but I'm actually probably only finding one that I don't want that's any good every 6 months.
Yeah. So
there's probably no point in setting up a whole business because I don't want to do that. But then you can team up with someone and just make a bit of quick cash here and there, which is good as well.
Yeah.
If you sign up, if you go into a deal with an established deal sourcer, typically what percentage would you expect to be taking? You know, how would the split typically
be? Usually it'd be 50-50, you know, because the deal sourcer hasn't found the deal, hasn't done the work, if you like, but they've got the investor, they've got the contracts, they've got the sales skills.
See, I think 50-50 is falling in the favour of the person that's found the deal. If I was a deal sourcer that was an established deal sourcer that could find deals, I would want more than 50%.
How much would you want?
75.
Really? But the person that's finding the deals is out on the road doing the viewings, negotiating, back and forth on emails. You're just there with your list. All right. Well, if you want to sell deals, don't go through Russ. You'll end up getting stung. But most people would do 50-50.
I would say somewhere in between 25 and 50 would be fair.
All right, we'll call it 38, 62, 72, 62, whatever it is. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
38%. Is that right?
Could do. 33, 67, sort of two-thirds to a third split. I would want 75%.
I'd say the average person would do 50-50, but Russ would take a little bit more. But you have got a big investors list.
Exactly.
With hot, active investors. So maybe if you've got an investors list that you've nurtured and they're ready to buy and they're hot and they're ready to go, maybe you can charge more.
Yeah.
But if you're just the average Joe with, you know, a handful of investors where you'd probably be able to sell the deal. It might take a bit of work from you, then it might be 50-50, maybe.
So in that case, we think that the actual finding of the deal is worth somewhere between 25 and 50% of the deal. So what's the other 50 to 75%? That's obviously the finding deals is great, but it's even more important, at least equally important, but probably even more important, to be able to have the second part, which is the ability to sell the deal.
Yeah.
So how do you have the ability, you know, how do you have the ability to actually be able to sell the deal? What do you need to do?
Well, you need to have investors that are ready to buy and trained to buy when you send your deal to them. And the way that you do that is by having a CRM system. where when an investor joins a CRM system, one, they get value, some sort of free value from you, or they get a point of contact from you as a thank you, a piece of value or something. Then they go for a campaign where they know, like, and trust you, and by the end of the campaign, they will get to know who you are as a company, they'll trust you as a company, they'll like you as a company, and they'll also know the process of what to do when they get a deals email. So, for example, it might be that you join our list, that you'll get an email saying, thank you very much for joining our investors list. We might give you a free PDF guide on, I don't know, you know, the best areas for HMOs, something like that, for example. And then we'll send you like every couple of days, we'll send you an email automatically. And it might be like the first one is all about us as a company. So, you know, we're part of PIMS, we'll give our PIMS number, we'll say how long we've been a part of PIMS for, we'll show you our company number, you know, we'll tell you all of the company structure and setup that we've got in place with the insurances and the redress scheme. Then, next, now that builds trust then, because now they're thinking, right, they're a credible company. The next step is all about, you know, the process. What does the process look like? So it'll be an email that has a template of a deals email, and it will say, here's what to expect when you get an email with deals from us. This is what it will look like. This is what you need to do if you want to reserve a deal. This is the phone number, blah, 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 blah. And it'll give you a step-by-step of how to reserve a deal. Then you might get another one, and it might be testimonials from investors where they've said what their experience has been like working with us. Now, once you've gone through a campaign
I think testimonials and case studies are key.
Well, yeah, that's a big part of trust.
Because showing them what the experience is.
Well, the first thing that I do before I go to do and book anything, or, you know, do anything like a holiday or book a hotel or buy something, I'll look at the reviews. And it's similar to a review, isn't it?
Mm.
Testimonial, see what other people say.
I won't name the agency, but we had a meeting with an agency yesterday, and it was to do with marketing. I don't want to give too much away, right? But while I was on the Zoom meeting, I went on to Trustpilot to look at their reviews. And they had a mixed bag, I'd say. They didn't have many reviews. They had about 20 reviews. And 22% of them were one star.
Oh, wow.
Most of us were five star. But the top five star one, the guy's name, I was like, hold on a sec. Went back onto the Zoom. And it was literally the guy that I was having the sales guy I was having the meeting with. It was him that had left the five-star review.
Oh, wow.
For their company. I was just like, oh, my goodness.
Nah, you don't want to be doing that.
Nah.
You want to have genuine, good reviews.
It's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is literally embarrassing. I was like, do I? I had a few of my team on the meeting, and I posted it in our little group. I was like, look, literally him. While we were all in the meeting, we were all like...
Yeah, that's horrible, that is. You don't want to do that.
Nah.
You want good, genuine reviews. So, what was the initial question, by the way? How to
set up a successful deal-selling business.
So, how to set up a successful deal-selling business is to find good deals.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to find good deals.
Build up your investors list. Set foundations with your CRM systems, working with investors, taking them through email campaigns, setting up your company.
Can we talk a bit more about building the list?
Yeah.
Right, so building up a list. So, when you say building a list, you mean adding names, emails, phone numbers of investors that might be interested in buying your deals to your CRM, to your database.
Yeah.
So a lot of people to begin with, if they're first getting started, literally this database could be, I wouldn't recommend it, but it could just be an Excel spreadsheet, right?
Yeah.
That you then send the emails to. It'd be much better to get something like MailChimp, which is free, up to a certain number, or something like Constant Contact, or any number of CRMs. But start putting people's details into the CRM. So the question is, how do you find these people? How do you get them into the CRM? Well, one way is through networking.
Yeah.
I mean, networking is a really, really good way. So, for example, people that are on our academy, they've got loads of people that are interested in buying deals that they know are prime, hot. They can go to networking events and talk. And when you go to a networking event, we all know the best thing to do is to force your deal down people's throat, right?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No.
So how do you network effectively and get people... what's the best way to go to a networking event and get a list of names to add to your database?
Well, you could do a 20-second pitch.
Sure, do 20-second pitch. What would you recommend saying? Typical 20-second pitch. So you're at a networking event.
Yeah.
You're a deal source. You've just got started. You want to add people to your list. What would you say in your 20-second pitch?
Say something like, "Hey, my name's Ricky. I'm a property deal sourcer. We're finding higher return property deals all across the country. If you're an investor looking to invest in some juicy property deals with good cash flow, then come and see me at the end."
And what do you think? Because I think it's always good to be quite niche when you're doing this sort of stuff. What do you think? I know that yours was just a quick analogy, but yeah, across the country. Do you think it's worth specialising in either in an area or a strategy or both? So, you know, for example, I'm finding rent, service accommodation, rent-to-rent deals in Brighton, for example.
I'm not a fan of that.
Are you not?
No, because I think if I'm building an investor's list, I want to find out what my investors want and then I'll give them what they want. If you just focus on an area and a strategy, your investors might not want that.
But don't you think that as well, though? Right, let's say, imagine you're just sitting there in the audience and you hear someone say, "I'm a deal sourcer, finding good deals across the UK." It's like, meh. Imagine if you lived in Brighton.
Yeah.
And they're like, and your strategy was service accommodation. And they said what you, and they said the first thing, you'd just be like, but if they said, "I'm looking for deals in Brighton, rent service accommodation," you'd be like, ooh, it'd be like, bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, but how many people would be interested in that compared to how many you would lose if you just had a very specific niche?
Well, I suppose that then it's a question of how specific do you go, right?
So it could be that you're finding service accommodation units on the coast.
Yeah, it might be that you don't go just to Brighton.
Yeah.
But you just need
specialise in service accommodation.
I specialise in finding rent to service accommodation deals that make at least £1,000 per month per unit. If you're interested in that, and then that way, bang, anyone that's interested in service accommodation is like, oh, that sounds interesting.
And you can craft your 20-second pitch and it will chop and change, you know, and find what works. But yeah, I think having a niche is good. And
especially as you're probably going to have a niche anyway, because if you're looking for deals, you're probably going to be looking for a certain type of deals for yourself.
Yeah.
You're probably not looking for everything.
Yeah.
Or you're probably going to be looking in the same couple of areas. You're probably not literally going to be like, oh, look, there's one in Birmingham. Oh, there's one in Newcastle. Oh, there's one in Cornwall.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be looking in an area. So you might as well hone in on that and have that as your niche.
Dominate it.
Dominate that niche. Your patch, niche, strategy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then that way, you rule out all the people that are... If you're not finding BRR deals, you don't want people that are looking for BRR deals on your database.
Well, you want to be the go-to guy or girl.
For whatever it is.
Yeah.
100%. So you go, you do your pitch. I'm looking for people that are looking for service accommodation deals that are going to be making £1,000 a month. If you're after that sort of deal, come and chat to me.
Yeah.
And then you give them your business card, right?
Yeah, you give them your business card if you don't want to build an investors list.
All right. So you don't take a business card, Rex?
No, if I give you a business card,
yeah,
right, first thing, let's say I'm a deal sourcer and I've met you, you're an investor. If I give you a business card, are you ever going to reach out to me? No. What are you going to do? You're going to go home, you're going to get it out of your pocket and put it in the bin. Or...
No, we'll tell you what you'll do. You'll keep it.
And it will go in the wash machine.
Yeah, you'll keep it for about a month and then you'll look at it and go, who's this? And then it will go in the bin.
Exactly. Or the wash machine.
Probably
it's either going in the bin or the washing machine. So what I like to do is I like to collect people's cards.
If it went in the washing machine, who would you blame? Who does your washing in your house?
Me.
Do you?
I like doing my own.
You do your own washing?
Yeah.
Oh, so you are to blame then?
Okay. I am to blame. But I always empty the pockets and make sure.
Do you?
No business card, yeah.
If you threw your trousers on the floor.
Yeah.
And they got picked up and put in the wash.
Yeah.
And they had something in the pocket.
Yeah.
Whose fault would it be?
The person that washed them.
You reckon?
Yeah, because I know.
Yeah, I agree.
I do the washing.
I agree. I agree. Carry on.
I can't remember what I was saying.
Something to do with business cards.
Oh, yeah.
You
so
don't
I
take
collect.
Theirs.
No, I do take theirs.
Oh, you do? You don't give them one of yours.
I don't give them one of mine.
Do you have a business card?
No.
No, don't they?
No. Waste of time. I want to collect people's data and then put it onto my system myself.
What do you think of those metal business cards? Have you seen them?
Yeah, I've seen people that, put them on fridges and stuff as well.
Have you seen the ones where, like, you go, you've got your business card, it's like a metal one, that you've only got one, though, and then they hold their phone out, and you tap your metal business card on their phone,
details go
and
in.
The details pop up.
I don't want to give... I don't want... No, I want to be the one taking details. Yeah. So I can reach out to people.
I agree.
I want to be the one. You, I'll tap your card. Thank you.
I totally agree with you. But that's funny, because I think most people...
First thing that most people do is go and get business cards made. Stupid idea. Yeah. Don't do it. Collect people's data.
And then I'm just like, oh, sorry, I haven't got a business card. Can I have one of yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even say sorry. Have you got a business card? Have you got one? I'll have yours. Thank you. Bang. Next person. Don't waste any time.
Yeah. So you go through, you collect business cards.
Yeah.
Go, and the first thing I always do at the end of a networking event is I go straight back to my CRM,
put them on business cards,
bang, build your list.
Yeah. That's one way. You could also do adverts. There's loads of ways. You know,
another way you sort of briefly touched on earlier is creating like a lead magnet. So creating something you're going to give away for free that you think it has to be something that an investor would want.
Yeah.
So some people do like prize draws, for example, competitions, win an iPad. Problem with that is everyone wants an iPad.
Yeah.
Right. So you want something niche enough. So for example, if you were finding service accommodation deals in Brighton,
yeah,
you might do a blog. You might create a guide on how to find service accommodation deals by the seaside,
yeah,
or whatever. And then you know that anyone that downloads that is looking for service accommodation by the seaside, so then you've got their database, and then you can start selling them deals. And they might not want to buy a deal from you, they might not, but you know that at least they're looking for service accommodation units,
yeah,
by the seaside, or whatever it is. Or you could, whatever you create that you give away for free, in return for their details, but it has to be something that makes you know that they want what you're selling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It has to be related to your niche of what you're doing here.
Yeah.
So that's a great idea.
And normally it is literally just whatever it is that you're selling.
And you can include that on the adverts if you run adverts. You can include that can be part of your advert.
Yeah, you can run Facebook ads.
Yeah.
Which you can target. You could target people that live in your area. You could target people that are shown an interest in Samuel Leeds.
Yeah.
Or in the Property Investors podcast, or in property investing, or whatever it is. Find people that show an interest in that. Show your ad to them. Free guide, free guide, free guide. And then bang, you're getting all these people downloading your guide. But at the same time, giving you their emails. So then bang, you straight away into your weekly email with your case studies. This is Ricky. Ricky bought one of my deals. Ricky made this much a month. Hey, Ricky, what do you say? A little video of Ricky. Hey, thanks ever so much. Bought this to anything.
Russell was terrible.
So yeah, 100% you want to build that list. How many investors do you think is important to have on the list?
I mean, the obvious answer is the more the better. But how many investors is it important to have?
I know people that are successful with like literally 100 names on.
Yeah,
them.
I think the answer to your question, I think, is one. Because you only need one investor to buy. But obviously, you want to grow the list,
because often they'll repeat buy as well.
Yeah,
especially if it's something like rent to rent, where they're not needing loads of money up front. They buy one, that's good. They'll buy another one.
Yeah,
they'll buy another one. Keep in touch with your investors.
Yeah,
ring them up. How's it going? Check in with them.
Ring them up. How's it going?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, get into it. Yeah, there's a whole. We're trying to. I guess we're trying to go through how to be a deal sourcer and stuff in, you know, half hour. This will take, to go through the A to Z of deal sourcing, how to build your investors list, how to sell the deals, you know, customer care, speak to your investors, you're talking at least 2 days.
Yeah, well, you run a day, don't you, with the deal sourcing crash course,
yeah,
which with Samuel, which teaches people how to get started. So if you are interested in setting up your own, obviously we've given as much as we can on this podcast, but if you are interested in learning how to do it, you can spend the whole day with Ricky and with Samuel, who between them have sold hundreds if not thousands of deals made. Samuel became a millionaire from deal selling. A lot of our students are making 20 or 30 grand a month. So you should get booked on the deal sourcing crash course. And guess what? We're touring the UK, right? So you can do it from London, from Birmingham, Manchester. We're touring the UK. And we also run it virtually as well. So you can attend virtually if you're abroad or you can't make it on the day. You can attend virtually. And tickets are only £1. £1. Spend the whole day learning about how to sell and find great property deals with Ricky and Sam as well. Highly recommend checking that out. I will drop a link below. Hope you guys smash it in your deal sourcing, deal selling ventures. And hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Russell Leeds.
I'm Ricky Mandel.
And we'll see you next week.